We made this. Hello and welcome to Scheduled Programming, the official TV podcast of the We Made This Podcast Network. I'm your host, Matt Latham, and Scheduled Programming is a show taking a closer glance at new television, examining the good, the bad, and the ugly of the small screen. In this episode, we're taking a bit of a detour from the comedy and drama that we've spoken about so far on the podcast, and we're dipping into the reality slash game show slash cooking program, The Great British Bake Off. The Great British Bake Off, which is often abbreviated as Bake Off or GBBO, is a British television baking competition produced by Love Productions in which a group of amateur bakers compete against each other in a series of rounds attempting to impress a group of judges with their baking skills. One contestant is eliminated in each round and the winner is selected from the contestants who reach the final. The first episode was aired on the 17th of August 2010 with its first four series broadcast on BBC Two until its growing popularity led the BBC to move it to BBC One for the next three series. After its seventh series, Love Productions signed a three-year deal with Channel 4 to produce the series for the broadcaster. The programme was originally presented by Sue Perkins and Gidroich,
I believe.
Gidroich, with judges Matt Berry and Paul Hollywood. Following its move to Channel 4, they had presenters with slightly easier to pronounce surnames, with Noel Fielding and Sandy Totsvig taking over presenters. Then Toxvig was later replaced by Matt Lucas. Hollywood and Prue Leith are the current judges. The series is credited with reinvigorating interest in baking throughout the United Kingdom and Ireland, with shops in the UK reporting sharp rises in sales of baking ingredients and accessories. Many of its participants, including winners, have gone on to start a career based on bakery, while the BAFTA award-winning programme has spawned a number of specials and spin-off shows, including a celebrity charity series in aid of sport relief slash comic relief or Stand Up To Cancer, Junior Bake Off for Young Children, which is broadcast on the CBC channel and then on Channel 4 from 2019, and after show series An Extra Slice and Bake Off The Professionals for teams of pastry chefs. On the 2nd of November 2021, it was announced that The Great British Bake Off has been renewed for a Series 13 to air next year in 2022. And if you're bored of me talking, that's fine. I've got a guest with me to kind of break up the monotony of me. My guest here is Ian Clark from the We Dig Me Music podcast and free with this month's issue. How you doing, Ian?
I'm okay, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I think my throat's a bit dry now, but all the background leading up to what the Bake Off is all done. And we're here, and you're here to have a chat with the Bake Off with me. So
Yes.
And I think, basically, come to it, when did you start watching The Great British Bake Off?
I think there's a convenient link between my getting together with my now wife and my starting watching Bake Off. Because previous to that, I didn't have any... I just had no truck at all with reality TV and I just didn't give a shit about things like that. I was very, very staunch on my... It needs to be a proper programme written by a fucking... with actors and script writers, and it needs to be proper and real, like actual television rather than reality TV. I've never been a prior to my relationship, I'd never, you know, I'd always been, like I say, a bit of a stickler for that shit. And now we'll watch any old crap mostly.
So what is it about the Bake Off that like mate fell for it or basically broke through that tough exterior?
See, that's the thing. Like when we started watching other things, we watch stuff like Love Island and The Circle and things, and it's always good fun to judge people and watch how just fucking shitty some people can be. And That is not what you get with the Bake Off. What you get with Bake Off is just an outflowing of positivity. Everyone's very supportive of each other and it's just lovely. It's just nice and warm. I did read that originally they tried to make drama and, like, you know, make it a little bit more competitive. Mel and Sue were like, no, that's not going to work. Let's not do that. Let's be nice. And that's that. I think that's what's won everyone round, is that it's just, you know, it's, even if you don't really give a shit about baking, it's nice to just watch people being supportive of each other, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a wholesome element to it, which
it is. Wholesome is a word I should have come by and I just skirted around it.
But yeah, I mean, you've got, say, you said like stuff like Love Island and The Circle. I've I've only ever watched one episode of The Circle, and that was when I was in the urgent care unit waiting to be seen by seen by emergency DP at like 10
a.m. That's fair.
Yeah, it was distracting, but yeah, there's always a kind of weird whole concept of that subterfuge and like catfishing more or less, and it's just
Basically encourages you to be a shitty person.
Yeah, so. and I've never watched Love Island, and I mean, and I don't really have that much intention to, but from what I've known about it, I know that I probably won't like it. But I feel it's like the Real Orange County or the Real OC with like those American kind of style shows where it seems to like kind of deliberately try to
cause drama and
whereas I think Bake Off kind of it'll scrape anything like that, but it's just very rare that that happens, and you're kind of left with like a upbeat positivity thing. I can remember, I think the first time I watched it was series 5, which I think was the first one it aired in BBC One, and it was the one that Nadia Hussain won.
Potentially. I don't know. No, I haven't watched that, I'm sure.
I think that was the first one I watched, because that was back when it was on BBC One, and I think the series after was Candice Brown won. And then it moved to Channel 4.
Yeah.
And like, I watched the first two series, but then when it moved to Channel 4, it moved, I think, to Tuesdays. Because I can't remember what day it was on, but it's now moved to Tuesdays. Mm. And I never watched it on Channel 4 because it conflicted for, because I was at a running club at the time. And like, I just could never watch it. But then I think during last year in 2020, there was a thing about the whole behind the scenes being that they was all in a bubble, which I think was the same this year. And like,
yes.
And like all the contestants and the crew and the cat and the judges and stuff were all in like a bubble for about 6 weeks, and I thought, you know what, I might as well go back into it because I'm not doing anything on a Tuesday evening anymore. And then just kind of fell back in love with it, and then ended up afterwards kind of binging all the Channel 4 series in like particularly in like the latter half of 2020 when was just entering another lockdown, and like he's like, oh yeah, you're not going to see any of your family this Christmas or anything. It was nice, upbeat kind of.
Yeah, I think we all needed that kind of positivity at that point. You know?
Yeah, and
it was a dark time that.
Yeah, and it was a nice kind of thing to be kind of to watch and just bask in like positivity and also looking at cakes that you can't eat.
Yes.
So I remember kind of cat binging pretty much most of Channel 4's output in like about 3 or 4 weeks last year. And I'm all fully caught up. And we got to this year, at the time of recording, we're just a couple of days off from the final. So we are going to spoil it. So if you've not watched this current series and you don't want to know who wins, then perhaps just press pause and just come back a bit later on.
I feel like if you start watching it first couple of episodes in, it was reasonably clear. I had it down to two people, and I was wrong actually in my favourite. Clearly,
yeah. So
I was Team Jürgen all the way.
Oh yeah, no, completely. I was good. The semi-final where he left, I think it might have been the right decision because I think he had a bit of a bad week.
Yeah.
In the semi-final, and in how they judge, it's like the right decision. But man, I was so gutty.
I've had discussions with my wife about this one because they always maintain that they'll judge it week to week, but then as you move on, they clearly are judging it, taking their previous performance into account.
Yeah. I want to come back
but
to that idea.
But sometimes they don't.
Yeah. I want to come back to that idea in a second when we talk about the final, because I think that comes to play in the final, but I don't want to get jump ahead in that. But so I think before we... I think we'll just have a chat about this series first. So the...
Yeah, yeah.
So series 12, I think it started in... began airing on the 21st of September and then finished on the 23rd of November, which... seems quite short when you think about it, but but it's like at least a good 10 weeks between the two of them, and And what we've got, yeah, like 12 amateur bikers. So we had Amanda, who was a police detective from London. We had Chiggs, who was a sales manager from Leicester. We had Christelle, who was a client relationship manager from London. We had Freya, who's a student from Scarborough. We had George, who is a shared lives coordinator from London. Giuseppe, who was a chief engineer who lived in Bristol. We had John Zeno, who was a head of finance from London. We had Jürgen, who was a physicist, who was from Brighton. Lizzie, who was a car production operative from Liverpool. Maggie, who's a retired nurse and midwife from Poole. We had Rashia, who's a junior HR business partner from Birmingham. Yay. And Tom Fletcher, who's a software developer from Maidstone in Kent. So they were their hometown. But from the get-go, when I first watched it, for a show quite wholesome, I don't know if you noticed this, but the lineup this year seemed to be very much, I felt like it was perhaps the casting team. Perhaps maybe wanted to pee off a few right-wing newspapers.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, and why would you not want to do that?
Yeah, and which is great, because I think it was very kind of diverse in terms of representation, and quite a few European.
Yes.
Quite European people who lived in the UK.
I mean, it's always very diverse, but not so much. Yeah, you're right. It was more culturally diverse, having an Italian and a German on there.
Yeah,
no, that was more. I think, yeah, at first.
Yeah, and I think Chiggs. Family was originally from Cyprus. I think.
Yeah, I think he's Cypriot. Yes, yeah. A friend of mine actually used to work with him.
Oh, right. So.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And I think, and they did say as well, there was two Greek or half Greek contestants as well. Amanda and George had Greek family. So,
yes.
And yeah, and I think particularly in the modern day as well, I think it was nice to actually celebrate the fact the diversity of the UK, where particularly, I'm not going to get too much in the political stuff of this, but particularly in the current political climate where. They're kind of like there's a whole thing between Brexit and pro EU and the anti EU. I think it's nice just to have something so wholesome remind everyone that we are quite diverse. We're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because considering who we might have in power, we're not all bellends.
No. We're just people after all. That's, you know, I don't want to make a big statement or anything, but we're all just fucking humans. Like,
yeah. So, so what's your overall opinion of the cast this year compared to this year?
So I've made some notes, because I think they work to a bit of a formula. Like, yeah. there's always a kooky / spooky lady. less so this year, but like, if I'm looking at you, Kim Joy and Helena, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, yeah. What are you doing, Helena? Well, this is a spider. You know, like, there's always that. Always at least one woman that Paul Hollywood definitely fancies. Often, they interweave. Like, Lottie from last year was quite kooky, and Paul Hollywood fancied her. Then there was the Ruby, and obviously this year he had a bit of a thing for Christelle, I think. Then there's at least two people who you look at and you're like, you're fucking gone in week one, mate. You suck. But for me, I always put my money on the wrong one, and I'm like, oh, why are you still here?
Yeah.
Like, I was convinced Lizzie was going, and she was just still there. She just hung in inexplicably for just so long this season.
Yeah.
Then there's always a very precise man. He is often an engineer, but not always.
Mm-hmm.
And last but not least, a nice old lady who's very good at standard classic bakes, but none of the fancy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. There is kind of like the kind of... You can call them tropes, can't you?
They're definitely tropes, or like they're people that they're like, ah, there we go. Tick that box. Let's tick this box.
Yeah, so it feels like they kind of... I think it's because they have about 12 people. they have a kind of, they find themselves with a limited scope of kind of characters and kind of pigeonholes and stuff. And I mean, like with perhaps other reality TVs, you'll get the more, you'll probably have some that are probably easy to pigeonhole as, oh yes, we can make this one slightly more antagonistic and stuff. And whereas I think the mission statement to Bake Off is not to try and do that. They want to at least have 12 people that you're going to root for and you're going to miss when they go.
I think they also, like, not only the Paul Hollywood, oh, he likes her a bit, the spooky one is there for Noel. Like, I think that's a...
yes.
We need someone a bit spooky and a bit weird that gets Noel's sense of humour. Because a lot of the time, he is... I love his sense of humour, but he's a little bit too out there for a few of them. You can see their confusion.
With, like, is it the Mr. Spatula and the...
Oh my God, the spatula in the final, yes.
Yes. That was... Because I think he doesn't get a spoon in previous years, I think, where you have to kiss the spoon, Mr. Spoon or something, silly like that. But, I mean, there's the... I'm currently looking at the results summary on the Wikipedia, and they always have this one, like, elimination chart.
Yeah.
I've not looked back to previous series, but interestingly, Star Bakers have only been four people throughout this whole series.
Wow.
I'm not sure if that's a record or not. I've not gone back to check the previous 12 series, but yeah.
I think it was more well distributed previously. Yeah, but Jürgen was smashing it early on. Like, four of them, I think he had?
He had three in the end.
Three.
He had three and the rest had at least two. Giuseppe, Cheeks, Christelle and Jürgen all had Star Baker. Jürgen had three and the other three had two. I think there's some very strong bakers. I think pretty much when you got to the semi-final, it was hard to call.
Yes.
Hard to call the final four. And I think a couple of mistakes kind of cost Jürgen, who, as I said before, hashtag team Jürgen. He was unfortunately, I think a couple of mistakes. When Paul and Prue said on my social media that they kind of judge based on the week, that was one of the weeks they have to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a bit of a shame because if they had done looking back, I think he would have gone through. And to be fair, I could not have called who would have gone. It might have been a Giuseppe in the semi-final, actually. I think he...
He had a rough week as well, yeah.
Yeah, but I think he had a rough week. I think he'd gone back in the... showstopper, I think, in the end.
Mm.
Because Jürgen got the first and technical, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. Final. He did, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not usually a precursor to going home either, is it? Like,
no. No, I mean, like, yeah, getting eliminated when you're first and technical.
Mm.
But, I think there's quite a few. I think you get to around about episode five, and what you notice is that I think originally when the first start off, it's like from 8 till 9:30, and then they'd start losing 15 minutes when there's less coverage. But but what you find is that they will start around, and I noticed this when I was binging the previous series, is that they get to around episode five, and when they've got more time, you start to see how the bakers interact with each other, and you kind of see you can see the pre-existing friendships that have
built, which is stuff. That's the bit that makes it, you know, so nice when one of them's struggling and you would just see someone glance across and just run and help them carry things or ask them what's gone wrong and stuff.
And you just start interacting, starting to gauge what kind of relationships they have with each other. And
I think it's
particularly strong with this series and the previous series because the way that, from what I've read, is that the way that the series is filmed is that before COVID, it was the case that they would travel to wherever it was being filmed that year on a weekend. So they'll turn up like crack of dawn on a Saturday or even Friday evening.
Yeah.
They'll do the signature and the technical. And then the second day is the showstopper.
Oh, so they're off in the week just hanging out with their family and having their normal life, yeah.
Yeah, so and probably doing their jobs. But because of lockdown and COVID last year, they had to do, I think it was like 7 weeks from, I think because um, I from the bikers last year. I follow, I think, Laura and Lottie on Instagram, and they are just doing a couple of live interviews. Or like kind of live streams. And they said it was about 7 weeks. There was all isolated. So, and they're filming over a certain, so it was a lot less condensed. So they had a lot more time with each other. So, and you can kind of see that during the actual filming. And it's the same, and it's the same with this year. Matt Lucas was saying it was actually filmed over 6 weeks, but they filmed 2 days on, 2 days off. 2 days on, and the 2 days off, there was all in the practice tent.
So basically just hanging out the whole time then.
But I think they were constantly baking, so you had the filming and the actual competitive days. And then you had the days when they're in the practice tent. But because, but then the contestants are all quite close knit together. And as much, and it, from what I've read, it feels like it's quite intense and everything. But I think, particularly with these last two series, you get, you feel that kind of closeness with the contestants as the series goes on.
And yeah, definitely.
And part of me kind of thinks that that's what they should keep doing, I think.
It's probably not going to be possible, I don't think, once people are back to their standard day jobs and things. But you never know, because, I mean, I keep circling back to Love Island The Circle, but they do it, you know. They're off on a desert island or whatever for a month, so why not? Why not? For the sake of positive, cheerful programming.
So, I think one of, is said, the one of the highlights is the kind of growing friendship between them. And like the fact, and like, you can see it in like the last couple, when episodes where when someone is Star Baker, and you can kind of, and the Bakers are kind of know that they might be in line, but then if they don't win immediately, they are, they're like, oh my God, it's great. Congratulations and stuff. Like, it was, I think, like when I think Christelle got Star Baker, I think the semi final, immediately, like everyone was like, oh my God, well done. So, so in terms of this series, any kind of moments or weeks that stand out to you in terms of.
You know what? I think one of my absolute favourite moments was when Matt Lucas perfectly sang, was it the tune of the Flint? It was the Flintstones in German next to Jürgen. And he's like, that's what it's like, isn't it? And Jürgen just went, yes, maybe, kind of, and just walked off, like, just completely fucking, like, no, I'm not engaging with this. And he'd been stood next to him for the whole time just doing something. And then the moment Matt Lucas stopped and was like, come on, what, you know, acknowledge that my German was good. He just was like, okay. That was, I think that was my absolute favourite moment.
So, I can't remember what exactly was said, but there was, and I apologise for, I'm not going to swear, but I'm going to apologise for Lauren Town a bit, Prue Leith, either inadvertently or, no, actually, I'm convinced she knew exactly what she was doing. She made perhaps the most overt squirting reference to do.
Yes.
It was a couple of weeks ago, I think, but I can't remember exactly what it was, but she was on about the balls, like when you need to get into squirt or something, and they just saw Matt Lucas and Paul.
Prue is filth sometimes. Yes. And it's fantastic, because she just comes across as this reasonably nice old lady most of the time, and then she'll come out with something you're like, oh my God, Prue, what a Mary Berry never said stuff like this.
And I think previous week she mentioned the fact that it was 80, and then on Twitter everyone was going, she's how old? But yeah, she's got the mind of a 13 year old and the but yes, it's, because it comes across as either being innocent, but then, like, if you kind of think about it, she knows exactly what kind of what she's going for.
I don't think you get to 80 and not be worldly wise.
And I think and apart from that, I think it was one of rare moments of innuendo, which used to be a lot more prevalent in the early seasons, which we'll talk about in a bit. But I think, I think quite a bit of interesting things that happened throughout this. One of the highlights, I think, for me particularly was the semi-final. I think semi-final, because, like, it was, I think it was a point, as much as I was Team Jürgen, I did remember saying to people that I want Jürgen to win, but this is the first year that if any of them won, I wouldn't
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't know. So, because that's how strong it was. I mean, like, again, on Twitter, I think at the semi final, saying, can you just, like, have all four of them come back next week? And
yeah, yeah, just, but, you know, that would have been good.
But yeah, but, and it was probably the most, one of the most evenly balanced finals that we probably had as well.
I think so.
Yeah, compared with last year. I mean, as much as I liked Laura from last year, I think she was constantly making kind of silly slip ups, which, but I think she managed to come through with the skin of her teeth, which is a shame because I think seeing her kind of what she's done afterwards in terms of Instagram and stuff, right? She's a very capable baker. I think it's just the pressure that got to her. Yeah, whereas with this final, you've got kind of three almost kind of level headed, bakers who kind of knew what they were doing, made the odd slight mistake. But still managed to, for the most, like 95% of the time, did something that was almost immaculate. And it was probably one of the best finals we had in the series so far.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. They were all very strong contenders, yeah.
Yeah. Any highlights for you on the final?
There was a bit where I thought Chiggs was going to win. And I was like, oh my God, that would be amazing. Like, I Giuseppe 100% deserved it, but for a second there, I thought this, like, super intense, starey look, because he looked absolutely crazy a large amount of the time, didn't he? Like, you just cut to him and he'd just be glaring into the distance or focusing on something because his stare was insane. I was like, well, it would be an amazing, like, underdog story if he came from not even knowing about bacon 18 months previous to winning. That would have been amazing.
I mean, as I think we alluded to earlier, I think that, particularly in the final, I think the previous performance probably does come into effect a bit with the final. Because I think I'm going to say this now. I think all three of them could have easily won, and I would have been happy with them. And Giuseppe definitely deserves it. Definitely deserved winning. But I do think that perhaps, from what I see, again, we didn't taste them. I do think perhaps from what I see, I thought Chiggs perhaps did a bit better. I think because particularly on the technical, because Giuseppe actually burnt his
his buns. Although Chiggs didn't. His shape was wrong, wasn't it? Like, his were more vertical, if I remember rightly.
True. I thought his showstopper was immaculate. Like, he's like Mad Hatter. He took the brief, and that was playing card, like Jammy Dodger.
Yeah, oh, God,
Jammy
that Dodger. Looked amazing.
Those cards were, like, immaculate and perfect. And I was and it was just great. I think he didn't have enough time to finish his Cheshire Cat cake, but it was great.
Then there was that moment where Giuseppe had accidentally left the door ajar on his oven and it just hadn't heated up. I was like, oh, Jesus, that's some drama. Has he screwed himself here?
Yeah, and it's one of those things where suddenly you can see the editorial team suddenly go, oh, my God, we've got drama. Yeah. And then kind of, like, focus and, like, the music kind of gets to the more of that, where the key kind of changes to a lower key and it's dun dun dun, and it goes into, like, lower brass instruments, and you can kind of feel the editing team going, we need to make sure we can milk as much drama and this wholesome show as
possible. Make sure everyone knows how stressful this is for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, it was, I think a couple of years ago when Rahul won, he actually, I think one of the bowl actually smashed because of the heat of the tent.
Yes.
And he was given 15 minutes extra time. And, like, you watch, you actually see kind of, like, the crew come in and the music going dun 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 underneath. Yeah. Like, you can see the drop, oh my God, drama in the final. And, and I did actually, I felt really bad for Christelle as well. Because I thought she was pretty much going to win it until the focaccia.
Yeah, yeah. That was a horrendous mistake, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I thought, you know, when Prue kind of paused for a second before she said it was inedible, I thought she was going to say, this is amazing, or something like that. Yeah. And it was just that tiny little fragment of a second where you're like, oh my God, she smashed it. She hasn't even cooked it. Jesus, that's not great.
And it's like, it's raw. And I'm like, oh my God. And it's, and I think as well, particularly when, I think she's the I think she's like the second ever handshake Showstopper as well. I think Rahul got one for one of his weeks as well.
Yes.
I think my heart broke. I was like, he's like, you can feel like the nation's heartbreaking when you, because it's Raw, and thinking that she's
ended up. In the final, there's no getting away with that one, is there? You've just consigned yourself to third place.
Yeah, exactly. But I think in the end, that again, I think Giuseppe fully deserved. He kind of, I think he won the hearts very quickly. He was very similar to racing to Jürgen. I think it was like at one point it was either team Giuseppe and Jürgen. And I think then Chiggs and Christel kind of just seemed to, for about halfway point, suddenly just exponential performance throughout.
That's it. It was very much a two-horse race for the first few episodes. And then you're like, actually these two maybe as well.
Yeah. I need to make a shout-out for, I somehow discovered what seemed to be Chiggs and Glass's Twitter, where there's a whole subsection of Twitter now devoted to Chiggs and his glasses.
Okay.
Yeah. So, because apparently there's a lot of fans of him in glasses, so...
well, there you go. It's Twitter's a strange place, isn't it, Twitter? So, yes.
Yeah. And I shout out to Melissa Lusk on Twitter, who I liked the tweet, and she pretty much said, to pick a disc, I will gladly come on to pick a disc and talk about the band Chiggs and Glasses, because it is the perfect indie pop band name.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So...
So someone needs to form that band and write some songs, and then they can be on a podcast episode.
Yeah. So that's the latest season. And I think you say it's quite wholesome and stuff, but there's quite a lot of, in terms of like the construction and of how the episodes are put together and stuff, there's quite a lot. It's very kind of calm. It's very kind of, because you've got Matt Lucas and Noel Fielding, I've seen online people who like and dislike them, and say, bring back Mel and Sue and that kind of stuff. They kind of like acted as like the anchors of the show. I think they're there. I think that they're meant to be comforting, I think, and being like a reassuring element for the Bakers. Sometimes it seems like they're antagonizing them.
I think sometimes that, especially Noel, I think he's a little bit mischievous.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think he likes to mess with people. But it always seems very good-natured. Like, you can never see anyone getting properly aggravated with him. They're always just like, oh, you.
Yeah, but I think there's been a couple of times as well. I think Sandy Toksvig as well, when she was hosting, where I think when they need to, they are actually quite comforting.
Yes, they are definitely. Quite comforting,
and they're there, and they know how to kind of reassure the contestants.
Yeah,
I don't think there's been that many this year, but I think a couple of years ago, last year, there's at least one where someone almost broke down, and I think you actually saw Noel kind of managed to, I can't remember who he was. Is it that, or it might have been a couple of series ago, but there was a bit where Noel Fielding stopped being quote-unquote Noel Fielding.
Yeah, and just became like a nice, warm...
Who might be from behind the camera. So he's like, okay, there's the entertaining bit, but there's the, okay, you need someone to kind of cheer you up or just be there and stuff. And in terms of Noel Fielding and Matt Lucas, are you a fan of them in this compared to previous hosts? Or?
So, I've always been a fan of Noel Fielding. Like, I love the Mighty Boosh, and everything he does, I think, is very entertaining. But I was very sceptical about him as a host of this, because he's not, you know, he's a bit edgy, isn't he? He's a bit weird. And then he's doing, like, the nicest show on TV. Like, oh, okay.
He's the most reserved he's ever been, I think.
Yeah, and it took him a while to find his stride with Sandy, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that, because her humour is very, like, I don't want to say pedestrian, because that's kind of mean, but she's a very safe, nice person.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it took them a while to find their chemistry, and then obviously she left and Matt Lucas came in, and I think it, again... took them almost half a series to find their chemistry. Like, it just seemed a bit forced. But now, I like it. Now they seem to be playing off each other quite nicely, and they're both clearly nice, warm individuals as well, which is good. It adds.
Yeah, and I think Matt Lucas, because again, I particularly with Channel 4, I ended up watching the Matt Lucas series before I went back to watch Sandy Toksvig.
Yeah.
And Matt Lucas, I think, again, took about half a series, but I think because he's surprisingly quite low key in terms of kind of where Noel is. I don't want to say manic, but they're almost like two extremes.
Yes.
And then considering their previous comedic work, it's surprising that we're saying that about Matt Lucas. And but I mean, quite a few times I think Matt Lucas is very natural in terms of how to try and lift someone up.
Yes.
Depending on who they are, unless they're Jürgen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely didn't sit well with Jürgen.
But. Yeah. I think one of the other key aspects before we move on to the judges, I want to briefly mention an element that's been there since the beginning, before I started watching it, is the illustrations by an artist called Tom Hovey.
Mm.
And they are very short moments that probably you probably get about 30 seconds combined screen time at each episode.
Yeah.
But the illustrations are kind of like a key kind of signature part of the show, and they are part of its look.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't follow him, but I don't follow the artist on Instagram, but I did look at a bit beforehand, and like, it's, yeah, you can tell it's the guy who does the Bake Off.
Yeah, yeah.
Illustrations. I just wanted to mention that.
It's very British, isn't it? That's the thing. I mean, they've captured it. Like, the theme tune is very British. The imagery, all, you know, the fact that they're having this big cookery garden party, basically, in the grounds of a stately home. It's just so very quintessentially British.
Yeah, the competition element, it was conceived by a producer called Anna Beattie, and she spoke to a friend who'd seen the kind of concept of bake-offs in America.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Which is kind of like an American thing where they kind of either do like, say the cakes and stuff, or perhaps I've seen TV shows where they'll do like, or comedy shows where they'll have like, where they've got to bake stew or like chili or something. And there's been quite a few sitcoms where that's been the case. Mm. And Beattie was inspired by the classic English fate baking competitions and said, "I love that idea of village fates and the old fashioned baking competition with people who only wanted to bake a good cake." However, she failed to get any interest in the idea for about 4 years. And then I think in 2009, they pitched the idea to Janice Hadlow, who was then controller of BBC Two, and the pitch was successful. And commissioning editor Charlotte Moore commissioned the programme, and it was developed over the next 6 months. They first selected Mary Berry as a judge first. And following an audition, Paul Hollywood was also appointed, with Mel and Sue being approached to become presenters. So then that kind of British theme, kind of sensibility was kind of carried on. So they got the village fate and the tents.
Yeah.
Like the Women's Institute tents where you go and buy the cakes and stuff. The idea of the tent was based on the village fate. So you got all the buntings and the marquees. So it feels like you're in like a field in Shropshire. So when you say it's got the kind of British feel, it's kind of steeped into kind of British tradition.
Mm.
And that kind of echoes through. Like there's always bunting. You can probably say like a cameraman, if you've not got bunting in the background, you're fired.
Yeah, basically. You're a very bad cameraman if there's no bunting.
Yeah. Interestingly as well is that the bakers that apply, they get first assessed by a researcher. They have audition in London with two of their bakes. They undergo a screen test in an interview with the producer. There's a second audition and the applicants bake two recipes for the judges in front of the camera. And there's a psych evaluation. And between 10 and 13 applications are selected for the show, with two further bakers on standby should any of those drop out.
Oh, I like the fact that there's like a psychological evaluation. I feel like there should be more of that on reality TV, because Like, you especially, like, on the more vapid, like, Love Island type shows, you see people who have glaring personality defects.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, someone should be looking after you. Like, you're not well. Like, you know, you need someone to take you aside and help you deal with your issues. You don't need to be on national TV dealing with the hate of, like, hundreds of thousands of people on your social media feeds when you get back. You know, mm-hmm. that's not what... I think the fact that they clearly look after each other, and they look, you know, the crew and cast look after the bakers and want people who are healthy and gonna, you know, make it through the whole thing unscathed, as it were. I think that's, you know, that speaks to the goodness of the show. I think, you know, the whole wholesomeness of the entire experience.
Yeah, I didn't actually thought about it like that. So I think, yeah, so although trying to say that, can they cope with the pressure as well?
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
From what Gary, it's quite an intense.
I can imagine it's pretty intense. Yeah.
Like the people saying, oh, it's like, would you do it again? Like, ooh, and they say no, then they come back for a special, but then it's only like a one-off special. But yeah, so you say it's a lot of fun, but very stressful, and you can fully get the vibe of that.
Mm. Especially on the ones where they've had a really hot summer as well, so they're in a horrendously hot tent surrounded by ovens as well, you know.
Yeah, like, one of the things that keep coming up on Twitter and stuff is like, goes, why don't they just put air conditioning in the tent? Because like quite a few times they've always said about the temperature in the tent quite warm. And you can see, and you can kind of get the impression of that. And then that's the day that they want to make ice cream.
Yeah. And they just can't.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but then again, part of me does think that it might be slightly deliberate in the attempt at trying to get some drama.
Maybe. Like, no, we just want to test how good you really are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we've briefly mentioned about them, but the judges as well. So we've briefly mentioned that Prue Leith is a kind of dirty-minded judge.
Yes.
Who pretends she's not, because it pretends she's not. I don't know much about her before this. And
no, me neither. Well. Like, I knew the name, but that was about it. Carry on.
I didn't at all. But briefly looking there, so yeah, she's a born in on the 18th of February 1940. She's a British South African restaurateur, chef, caterer, television presenter / broadcaster, businesswoman, journalist, cookery writer, and novelist.
Wow.
And she's the Chancellor of Queen Margaret University, Edinburgh.
Crikey. So, all right then.
Yeah, so she's done a lot of stuff. A good sense of, like, I'd say, good sense of humour with honour and stuff. And
oh God, yes.
There's a very nice ongoing in joke about the fact that if anything tastes like or contains alcohol, then at least Prue's going to have some comment to say and stuff, which is quite funny.
Yes, just let's heavily imply that she's an alcoholic. Yeah, yeah.
But she even says the sales goes, you could probably do a bit more rum.
Yeah.
So when she says stuff like that. I think she's comes across as being more approachable and likable than Mary Berry was.
Yes.
Mary Berry was kind of to the point and say this was good, I liked it, however, and if it was wrong, goes, this isn't good, but this is why I didn't like it.
Yeah.
And then move on to the next one, whereas Prue's a lot more, a bit more of a personality to her.
Yeah, I think she's a bit more polite about it. Yeah, like you say, Mary Berry was just, yeah, she's quite mean sometimes.
Yeah, but direct. And which is quite interesting when you compare him to Paul Hollywood, who is arguably the face and kind of the flagship personality from the show.
Yeah.
So he's been there since the beginning. He's the one who moved with the show. So he's been there the whole time. So he's the consistent thing about it. And he's a
He's the reason they have the psychiatric evaluations, because he is clearly is quite terrifying, I think.
It's weird. On the one, he comes across like he wants to be the Simon Cowell of baking.
Yes.
But also comes across as actually human, whereas Simon Cowell will probably comes across as happily putting on, will just detonate a nuke on you.
Yeah.
And the only way to survive is if you show him a picture of a dog. Whereas Paul Hollywood, I think, comes across as being really strict and scary. Also, can almost be approachable.
Yeah, I think he's like, very much the father figure of the show. I think, he's there. He's quite intimidating and stern, but actually, if you need him, you know, like if you need him to be nice and warm, he can do that.
Yeah, and like it's like a weird ongoing joke that about how scary he's, or how you have to impress Paul and stuff.
Yeah.
There's like one of the recurring motifs is like you'll just see him just staring in the distance, looking at the bakers, and the bakers are going, like, looking around going, what's he doing? And he's there, and you can tell he's trying not to crack up.
Because he knows that he's just messing with. Yeah. Do you not find he looks quite a lot like a human husky?
Now you say that, yes.
I've got to credit my wife for that one. She was like, no, but he just looks like a husky, doesn't he? And I was like, shit. Yeah, he does. No way. How did I not see that?
But yeah, he's but I think as well, and he's got this kind of like, he's like the mythical kind of like, say, flagship judge of the show. He's always like thinking, oh, you have to impress Paul and Prue, but like Paul and I think from about series three, from what I read, which is when the idea of the Hollywood handshake appeared, where it comes like a kind of badge of honor, and stuff. And I've seen a bit of things online saying he gives too many, or whether it's not as sought after
anymore. Yeah,
yeah. Which you can kind of see, particularly like with later series where he's done a few, or in this series where he hands out three in one episode.
Yes.
And Mrs. Jürgen out, the bastard.
Oh. Unacceptable.
Yeah. But like as I said before, there's like only been two instances where he's ever given a handshake on a signature. And that was like with Raoul in 2019, yeah. I think. And with Christelle with the thing, which again, if you notice the the editing where you've got the on this week on the bake off, and I think it happened with the week before where it said last week, and he goes, "Oh, come here, you've seen this." Where it's like where it's purposely edited to think, "Oh God, he's found something really awful, like he's going to be raw or something."
Yeah.
And he says it to Christelle, and he goes, "Oh, come here a sec," and then hands his handshake. It's that attempt to try and get drama.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those tropes, isn't it? Like, oh no, something terrible is going to happen. Oh no, actually, it was the opposite.
Definitely, yeah.
Yep.
So obviously it's evolved throughout like the 12 years it's been on the air and stuff.
Yeah.
So I mean, one of the big things moving from BBC to Channel 4 is like the presenters change and stuff. But there has been kind of like notable changes. I mean, I think it appeared on Netflix for about 2 weeks in the UK. Briefly, but I think it's on Netflix, and it's Netflix in the US.
Yeah,
it's on Netflix. So pretty much anyone I follow on Twitter who watches it through Netflix. But I was really tempted to try and catch some of the earliest episodes to try and see what it was like.
Ah, yes.
I think like for example, in the first series, the presenters didn't do the voiceovers. It was only Mel and Sue started doing it. In series two, the handshake didn't appear till about series three. One of the big things I think, and I think part of it is because of the need for the ad breaks on Channel 4.
Yeah.
There was on the BBC, there was the quote unquote, the boring bit where they'll have like a 5 minute segment where they'll talk about the history of Battenberg or something.
Yeah.
Which went and, Do you miss them or?
Not. I hadn't even engaged my brain to think that they'd gone. So no, I guess not.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. It's kind of weird. I think I've in the research for this episode. There's a couple of people who said they missed them because it was quite nice to learn something. But again, it might be some people who probably did find that interesting, perhaps bakers who didn't know about the history of what there was baking in the technical or something. Mm. But you've got
the internet.
Like, yeah.
Look it up.
Yeah. Yeah. What's a baklava? What's a baklava?
Yeah, you don't need Paul Hollywood telling you what a baklava is. Not at all.
Yeah.
Like, just read about it.
Exactly, yeah. I'm interested to see the surge of Google searches. During the actual time of a live airing a Bake Off, because I'm wondering whether if you collate the start of a technical and the search terms,
yes,
like
bet.
People searching for,
I bet
what's a Belgian bun,
yeah,
but yeah, I think what I've noticed changed is that, and from what people have watched in the beginning is that the actual challenges. Seem to be either getting harder or more extravagant.
Mm. I think sometimes they're trying to reach too much. Like when they did, is it Chinese Week or something that they did last year? And it was actually wasn't even because it was like Japanese recipes, and then like there was like Thai recipes and stuff like that. And you're like,
why? It was Japanese Week.
Japanese Week, and there were like Chinese and other. So it could have just been Asian Week, and it would have been fine. But
yeah.
Like, that seemed a bit of a reach, to be honest.
Yeah. I think some of them are interesting. And there's the element to it. I think the conceit is that they're the best amateur bakers in the country anyway, so they should be tested.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're doing stuff that they're probably not, they're at their comfort zone, which is quite interesting. Like the stuff with the sugar bowls and glass dome, or the sugar glass domes that I was making, which is quite interesting. Or when they have interactive games.
Yes.
And stuff, which I thought was an interesting conceit anyway.
Yeah, yeah, it's an interesting twist, yeah.
Yeah, but then like last year they had, in the first week, you have to make a cake out of a celebrity.
Mm. Oh, that was magnificently bad, wasn't it? I remember, yeah.
Oh, that was good. Yeah, but then you have the famous kind of like Laura who did Freddie Mercury, and he was like a deflated balloon, which... I mean, you look back on the past and now, and it's a magnificent piece of kind of catastrophe, which is, I think it's become one of the most shit. It's like a meme in itself now, I think.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Didn't one of them do like a member of Blink 182?
Yeah, Tom DeLonge.
And then Tom DeLonge was like, oh, look, it's me.
Like, yeah.
Retweeting a picture of his own cake or something.
Yeah. I think he made a joke, something like, this is me after whatever or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that's, and yeah, I think the challenges get quite hard and stuff. And I think it's quite entertaining when they get pulled off well. Yeah. But I do notice that they seem to be constantly pushing the bakers into extremes and stuff. But then again, sometimes they work really well. There was I think Bread Week a couple of years ago. And someone had created a bread lion face.
Yes. Oh, God, yeah, that was very impressive. I can't remember who did it, but it was good.
Yeah, and I remember, like, Paul Hollywood going, oh, you've never seen anything like that. That is amazing. But then, though, you do get moments like, I think it was the brown, like, Chocolate Week last year, where everyone attempted to make brownies. And considering it, apparently brownies are supposed to be one of the easiest things to bake.
Yeah.
Like, there's about nine bakers all... failed.
It's the ones that don't know what... I was really blown away by how, like, none of the three finalists knew what a Belgian bun was.
Yeah, I mean...
Like, mind blower when you're like, do this, and they're like, what? Like, what? I've seen those in Greggs. How do you not know what that is?
Like, yeah, true.
If you can buy them from Greggs, you should know what they are if you're into bacon. I feel.
Yeah, I think it was one of those ones where it says you should at least know what they are, but you have to make them perfect.
Yeah.
So, like, what should be easy? I mean, like, there's a joke where there's a whole thing about the fact that the recipe was two lines.
Yeah.
Make a Belgian bun, make the curd.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I think it was also, like we were saying, did the same a couple of weeks ago where it says, you need to make a chocolate biscuit. And it was basically Twix.
Yeah. Yes. Obviously, they couldn't say that, could they? For advertising purposes, I guess. But, oh my God, yeah, that was good.
Yeah. So, yeah, but so I do think the... I can see why some of the challenges get more obscure and stuff, and perhaps it might be slightly unfair on the contestants, but again, entertainment mixed with the fact that when they get pulled off, some of them look amazing.
Yeah, and, like, so, you know, that's it. You, if you're watching it and then you're like, I want to be on it next year, you know, you're going to make yourself practice to a higher level because you know it's going to be more difficult. So theoretically, the show's going to get more and more impressive.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's interesting to see how much, as I said earlier, there's been a rise in baking, and there's probably people that are baking stuff. And the winner last year, Peter, he was like, what, 20, he's 20, early 20 or something? He actually said that he grew up watching Bake Off. So he was like 10 or 11.
Yeah.
And he learned, and he started baking because of Bake, like series one or two of Bake Off.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, and like you said that, and Paul Hollywood goes, "Oh my God, I'm old." But that's the effect it has. It's the same thing. Like I don't know what the exact name of it is. I've seen it called the Dana Scully effect, where like something, there's a big cultural phenomenon which has a massive impact.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Dana Scully is like Dana Scully from the X-Files is. Credited for the increase of females that applied for STEM college courses in the 90s, and so it's probably like all the people that worked for Elon Musk's Jeff Bezos' space program, whose name I can't remember, probably grew up watching Star Trek and was probably influenced to go into space.
Oh God, yeah.
Travel or
almost
space
certainly.
Sciences, and then. Yeah, and then had the chance to shoot Captain Kirk up into space, and they probably thought, oh my God.
Yes.
CSI, the same, the amount of forensic scientists that spun off because of CSI. And this has got the same thing.
Slightly more mundane, isn't it? Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's not, yeah, you're not going up into space, but it's still your baking stuff.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Part of me's watching it going, I might try and lease the sponge, try and make at least a sponge, and just I've never had the balls to attempt to bake something, but maybe one day I might.
I quite like the because it's become a thing, hasn't it? Like my wife was going around to her friend's house every week on a Tuesday, and like they'd have a rota of which one of the three of them that were there would bring treats that week, so they'd all sit there and watch it with a cup of tea and a cake, you know, and I quite like that. I'm sure they did a thing at her work previously where, like, it was a rota to bring in cakes on a day. Like, it was a work day, so they weren't watching Bake Off, but they're like, oh, it's bread week. Okay, it's your week. You bring in some kind of bread thing. And I just love the fact that people have made this kind of ceremony around it as well. You know?
Yeah, I'm in a WhatsApp group and my friends dedicated to the Bake Off so that the people who don't watch it in our main group don't get flooded. So, so there's that, and I'm also kind of, like, my sister and I are texting on WhatsApp throughout as well, going, oh, we think this, this, and this.
Yeah.
There's fantasy Bake Off challenges, like fantasy football.
Oh, wow.
I found it a couple of weeks too late, actually, as I probably would have done it with the WhatsApp group that I've got. But so you can actually have, like, so you can put nominations of, like, oh, I think so-and-so is going to go this week, which I think is slightly unproductive when it's before the actual show starts, because you can't really tell who's going to have a good week or not. But, yeah, you've got all that kind of, you've got, like, it's like fantasy football, but with cakes. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, isn't it, how much it's has that kind of, like, cultural thing.
And they haven't tried to make this happen themselves. That's the thing. They aren't out there being like, oh, you should all just get your friends around and have a cake party or whatever. People just want to do it because they like it. And that's, again, wholesome, lovely, isn't it? You know, it's just, let's do a nice thing. Let's meet up, be sociable, have a tea and a cake and watch Bake Off. Lovely.
Yeah. And I think that's a nice note to end on, I think, just to celebrate just how how much of a wholesome impact it can have.
Yes.
With like friends and people and stuff.
I would like to highlight though that they did the meetup thing at my house last year, and I much preferred that because then I also got cake. This year I did not get cake most of the time, and that was massively disappointing.
Wow. I live on my own, so the only reason I didn't get cake was because I didn't make any.
Ah, there you go.
What I should do is just buy stuff, buy cakes.
Yeah, and
just
eat. You should.
Yeah, just buy a pack of cake and just eat the whole thing. Well,
yeah.
Yeah. I need to do that for next year.
Definitely.
So with that, I say, Ian, thank you ever so much for coming on to schedule programming to talk about the Great British Bake Off.
No problem.
And to celebrate the wholesome nature of it.
Has been possibly the most wholesome and positive podcast I've been on in a long time.
I'm going to say, yeah, considering all the podcasts that I've listened to you be host or co-host and guest on, it's very, this is a very strange new side to you.
It is, right, yeah, because I'm definitely the spiky one on all of the podcasts that I do. I'm the one that says that, you know, drops the C-bombs and swears and is really bitter and angry about things. And yeah.
And there's probably people who listen to, like, Reading Music who listen to you on this going, are you sure this is Ian?
Yeah. 100%.
So talking about those podcasts, so what podcasts are they? Where can they find them?
So I do one called We Dig Music, where we, at the moment, we pick, myself and my two other co-hosts, pick our favourite 10 songs from the year, and then we'll rate each other's songs and our own, and then end up with like a top 30, as far as we're concerned, songs from a given year. So that's been fun. Then I also do one called Free With This Month's Issue, which is, in general, a much more angry podcast, I would say, where we'll have a guest on and they will pick a CD, one of those free magazine CDs you used to get. Colin will do his research, he'll buy the magazine, he'll do some background stuff, and then I will find out on the night of recording what we're talking about. And so I go in cold and usually furious about the shit that they're making me listen to. So, there's that. I feel I'd be remiss as well if I didn't mention the fact that I'm now the producer and editor of the Royal Enfield official podcast as well. So, if you like motorbikes and people talking about motorbikes, check that one out.
Okay, no, I wasn't aware of that. But one thing I am aware of is the Free With This Month's Issue and We Dig Music.
Yes.
Two very great podcasts that were also on the We Made This Network. On our illustrious kind of network of podcast that we find.
Yes.
If you want to find me, you can find me on all sorts of places, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under Pick a Disc. And Pick a Disc is the podcast I run, which is just basically having people talking about albums they want to talk about for whatever reason. And I believe you've been a guest on there in the past.
I have.
Talking about Refused.
Yep.
Refused. And so you have your co-hosts and stuff. Yeah, so if you think, oh, these two people talking about a TV show, talking about music, give us a listen. I'm sure you won't be disappointed, I hope.
Yeah. Why would you be? It's great.
So, and with that, I'll say thank you very much, Ian. And thanks for joining us for another episode. And remember, we are part of the We Made This podcast network. Please subscribe to schedule programming and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you review your podcasts. And if you want to help us our network, please consider supporting us on Patreon if you go to patreon.com/wemadethis. The Great British Bake Off is not all we are discussing, so we'll give you a taste of what you might have missed on the network in a moment. We'll be back soon to schedule more programming, so until then, do not adjust your set.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast.
So you know how you were both talking about the attractive women and how you spotted a particular one that you liked, etc, etc. Would you like to know what I put in my notes?
Go on then.
Yeah.
Love the Cuban heels.
They're very nice heels. And the fact he mentioned in the behind the scenes later on there, was it a size too small?
Yes.
Yeah. That totally hurt. Worth it for Cuban heels. For me, yeah. I'm 6'1", which is ever so slightly above average. If I get a pair of Cubans, I'm 6'3", and I look like a god. Yeah. I f***ing love Cuban heels.
pick a disc.
The Steps formula at that time was playing. If there's another verse, the Fail get it. If they want a little bridge or something like that, they might give it to H or Lisa possibly. But the hook and everything else would have been Claire.
Yeah, exactly. I think, well, notice as well, I think Lisa has a lot more kind of solo stuff or solo verses in this album, I think, from what I remember. As well. So the balance is slowly getting more into things. I mean, but it's something that usually happens in all kind of girl/boy groups.
Frame to frame.
My first trip to the cinema to see a Bond film was Die Another Day.
The first one I saw in the cinema was The World Is Not Enough. I tried to get into Tomorrow Never Dies. I was just too young, and we got rumbled in the queue, and I was absolutely devastated. She went, "Oi, are you 12 years old?" There was a woman in the queue. I thought, I can't remember if it was the woman behind the box office or not. She basically did like a kind of MI6 job on me and scammed me. "Oi, no, you're not getting in."
It doesn't sound like it took a lot of interrogation. There was holding a rope with knots in it to you.
He's like, "We know how long I'd last in the field."
are you 12 years old? No, yes,
I am.
It's like the stoning in Life of Brian.
He's like, "I'm sorry, I thought we'd started."
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.